Vancouver Island, a land full of rich, diverse cultures where you can find hippies and rednecks at the same local brew pub, blue collar and white collar sitting side by side at the lakes, and old and young and everyone in between with one thing in common: we love this island. Welcome back for a special edition episode recorded last summer in, I believe it was September of 2022, where we get to visit my friend Rick Jansen, who's been on the show, and as he takes me on a once-in-a-lifetime trip for me to the Tyee Pool, the legendary Tyee Pool of Campbell River, where we're going to be fishing for some of the biggest fish that we hope to find here on Vancouver Island.
Well, it's 4:11 a.m. in the morning. Led Zeppelin's on the radio. We are ready to go rock the Tyee Pool of Camel River, the legendary Tyee Pool, with the legendary guide, Rick Jansen.
So for those of you who listened into Rick's original episode, Reeling It In on season one, you heard a lot of Rick's story and his background in the fishing world and how he came to be a guide on the Tyee Pool. So last year, actually, we had tried to get onto the Tyee Pool to go and do a podcast episode right at the end of the season, the last day of the season. But the wind kicked up so bad that everybody kind of called it quits for the day. And so we were only able to kind of just go and lock up the boat for the year, and that was about it. So round two, we're giving it a good shot. We're doing the early morning run for the early morning tide from 5:30 to 7:30. And looking forward to spending some time with Rick, and going to go meet up with him right now.
Good morning, my friend. Oh, it's definitely morning.
Just entering the pool proper here. And as soon as I see the landmarks that indicate that it's deep enough to start putting the lure in, I'll get you to do that. We can see the other boats on the pool behind us, some more coming in front of us. And
some fishing. Absolutely gorgeous.
Some fishing already.
Beautiful out here this morning.
So we're fishing a big Tomic, 6-inch Tomic plug this morning because I had a strike on it in the morning tide last week, and I figured that won't go with what's hot, go with what's lucky. And we'll fish that for 2 hours this morning. We can see Quadra to our right, sun coming up over Quadra here in the next half hour or so. And in front of you can see Menzies looking up toward Roberts Lake and the camp that you're familiar with up that way.
Yeah, totally.
Painter's Lodge in the foreground.
How many mornings do you usually do?
That's a good question. I do far less mornings than I do evenings.
I can't understand why.
Yeah.
When you originally texted me, 4:30, I was like, he means PM, right? He definitely means PM, I'm pretty sure.
So, no, like, I'll get clients. If I'm getting paid, I'll take it.
You know,
I don't do a lot of volunteer mornings, but I wanted to squeeze you in. I've got a busy week.
Oh.
So half a dozen to ten mornings a season is about all I can take.
Is that mostly like a preference thing, or is it just the way it works?
It's the way, a mixture of both. I'd much rather roll the evening. It's easier on the body from 7 to 9 or so, you know?
Yeah.
In the evening, then back home at a decent hour for going to bed, getting my rest. But the mornings can be productive, and I don't mind doing them when I get a chance and it's nice weather and it's nice to get a fish in and be home by 8:30 and have your whole day in front of you.
Oh, right? Totally. You just had a fish just jump over your bow.
Well, there you go. So you can grab that rod now and unhook the plug, and you're right-handed.
Yes, sir.
Then you want to put that plug in the water on the left side of the boat.
Left side of the boat?
Yep.
And just let her go?
Let her go. And then you're going to pull off 10 pulls of line. That's it. 2. OK, Okay, now while you got your 10 pulls, I'm gonna look in here and get a weight out, because we're gonna add 4 ounces of weight to that.
Okay, bring it down a little.
Yep, and then we'll do some more pulls. Okay, so if you can swing that tip gently back to me.
You bet.
And I'll grab the tip and add the weight.
Got a nice now, little bob to it.
Yeah, now these are slip weights, they're release weights, that should, upon a strike, release themselves and slide down, right? So that you can reel the fish close enough for netting.
Okay.
Every now and then, it doesn't. And you go through the whole battle and the thing hasn't released. And so one of the two things that I'm allowed to do as the guide, go ahead and swing back that astern now,
okay,
is I can release the weight. So you're battling that fish, you can't get it any closer because the weight's stuck, I can pop it free.
Because you can't touch now for the, because there's an incredible amount of rules and regulations,
yes,
which I was reading through and quite impressed. I mean, it's about almost 100 years, right?
Yeah.
Of different rules and regulations that have been put through.
And the main ones have never changed.
Right.
Like the one you're referring to is that once the fish is hooked,
yeah,
once you've got a fish hooked on the line,
it's me and fish.
No one else is allowed to touch rod, reel, or line until the fish is netted.
Right.
Okay, so the only exception being that the one I just mentioned, I can release the weight, and then of course I can net the fish.
Right.
Other than that, it's yours and yours alone to fight and land. So when somebody says they've landed a tie out here, they have actually fished.
They're the ones who did it.
They're the ones who did it. So 10 more pulls there, bench. 10 more pulls.
Good.
Set the depth. And hold that rod on across your body.
Across the body like
that? Yeah, and then the rod low to the water, about parallel, and then a little bit of stern. Point it a little bit more toward the stern. The reason we have it right there is I can read the rod tip, and you've got swing back room.
Right.
You need some room to swing back and strike, because when the fish takes here, unlike a downrigger, you've got to whack it back.
Right.
You've got to set that hook.
Set the hook fast.
Yeah, fast and hard, with authority. Okay, and then as soon as that fish is hooked, you want to let go of the reel and let it run, because we've got 20-pound test. It may be a 30, 40-pound fish, and if you try to tug a war with that sucker, the fish is going to win.
Every time.
Yeah, so it's a trading game out here. You let him have all.
Swims away.
Yeah, you let him have all the line he wants, and when he's done taking line, then you take it back.
How many times have you been hit in the face by somebody striking? Has anybody hit you?
Not yet.
Because if you could see me right now,
yep,
you would understand what I mean.
How close you are.
If I'm going to pull hard, I feel like, oh, there's another
one. If there's a fish on your line, that rod is so bent, you're nowhere near me, but I want you to try. Yeah.
I'll take it. Absolutely fantastic.
Oh, these are some pinks jumping. There's the little guys. Plop, plop.
Do you do much pink fishing anymore?
Usually I do some. I haven't done any this summer because I've been quite busy with this.
Well, and, totally. This is a good place to be.
Well, part of the reason I do pink fishing is I like to fill the pantry with canned pinks.
Sure.
But we had such a terrific trout fishing trip this year up in the interior that we got our quota of canned trout.
Oh.
And I prefer trout to salmon when it comes to, you know, canned fish and sandwiches all winter long. So we did really good there, and so I haven't bothered with the pinks this year.
So for canned fishing, I feel like, is that something that you grew up with? Because I don't feel like that's something that my generation is necessarily carrying on as much, right? Like you hear it, and you kind of stick your nose up to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like what?
Yeah, like, well, what do you mean you're canning fish? Like,
yeah.
Well, is that something that you grew up with?
No, I hadn't. But we've tried freezing fish. Frozen fish only is good for so long, right? It starts to get freezer burn regardless of the method you use.
Right.
Vacuum sealing, deep flash freeze, whatever. You're going to, it's good. It's got a really short lifespan, whereas canned fish is good for indefinite.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And when it comes down to sandwiches, like prepped food for a sandwich, I pop open a can of trout, mix in some mayonnaise and some dill or something, and I've got lunch.
Sure.
That easy.
Yeah, and you know? You got that all year long.
It yeah, was,
like, ready
all year
to go.
Long. It's not going bad. Yeah, pressure canner is necessary. You got to do it right, you know,
yeah,
for the right length of time, the right pressure.
Right, make sure you're sealed and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I remember my grandma doing that.
Yeah. But talk like trout. compared to salmon, it's very light and delicate, and it's delicious in a sandwich. What we like, you know, you take a bagel, you toast it, you spread some cream cheese on it, you put the canned trout on there, and then some alfalfa sprouts or something like that. You got yourself a delicacy that's hard to beat.
No kidding. I didn't think I could be hungry this early in the morning, but you're making a case for it.
Well, look at that sky to the east there.
Oh, it was beautiful.
Isn't that stunning?
So we were saying this is still Venus, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. You see a beautiful big star over the horizon. Absolutely gorgeous.
Just over the sunrise there, glowing. And you can see a crescent to it. So you know it's a planet versus a star. I can see a crescent shape.
Right. Yeah. Got a little bit of a shape to it.
Yeah.
So what is the size of the Tai'i pool?
Well, technically speaking, with the no motor zone is about 700 meters long and 400 wide.
Okay.
And we're outside of that right now where we're sitting off the Argonaut Wharf. But we're allowed, all the water you see here, Discovery Passage, a fish land by Tai'i Club rules would count for the Tai'i Club.
Okay.
Okay, so the whole of Discovery Passage from Orange Point down to Hidden Harbor is technically legit. The only thing about the piece of water that I'm referring to there, that 700 by 400, is no motors. And it's exclusively for the use of people, hand-powered boats, fishing. Right?
But you've got quite a few today. Like we've got probably about a dozen, you think,
so far? And there'll be about 20, I think, when all told here.
Does that change for the evening? Like how many more?
Evening is more 30 to 40.
Okay.
Just again, for the same reasons.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
You know?
But it's still impressive. Like that's many that are coming out and doing that.
A fair bit of effort goes into every fish out here, you know?
Yeah.
Every fish caught represents a lot of man hours, quote unquote, of time.
Sure. Come out on a day where you really regretted it due to the waves and wind?
I've had more of that was with painters because it was more difficult to cancel a tide.
Sure.
When the lodge had booked them in.
Right.
And then you're just like, what the heck am I doing out here, you know?
Yeah.
There was one we called, Sean, you know, we called it short after only an hour because the wind was strong when we started. It got worse while we were out here. So it was like, no, this is too dangerous now.
Yeah, I mean, again, like to paint a picture, this is not a massive boat.
No, right? It's a 14-foot clinker rowboat.
Yeah, like a very wide canoe.
Yeah, exactly. So we're in front of Argonaut Wharf right now, and back in the day, they used to fish right off that wharf, like the Discovery Pier.
Yeah.
And, in fact, one of the biggest fish ever landed in this area was caught by a 10-year-old girl there in the 1970s.
No way.
Like a 72-pound Tai'i was caught by a 10-year-old girl in, I think it was 1972.
That's amazing. Yeah. Now, would that count in the Tai'i
no,
rules?
No, because it wasn't from a boat.
It wasn't from a boat.
It has to be
part of the rules.
Yeah.
Now, there's a pin system as well I was reading up
yes.
on. And we talked about it again, because Judy's in.
Yeah.
Your wife Judy's in there. But what's kind of the pin system as far as recognizing those that have
right.
got different levels of, or different sizes?
Of well, good question. The every angler who lands a Tai'i is eligible to purchase a lapel pin. And the color coding goes as follows. It starts with a bronze pin for a 30-pound fish. And then in 10-pound increments, it goes up through silver, gold, diamond, and ruby.
Ruby being over 70?
Over 70. Oh. You're counting right. Your math is good.
That's insane.
So your guess, in the nearly 100 years of the club's history, how many ruby pins have been awarded?
Oh. Well, I wouldn't think too many in recent history, that's for sure.
Uh-huh. That's a good guesstimate.
Five?
Assumption.
Five?
Good. Not bad. Two.
Wow.
Two have been awarded, one in 1947 and the other one in 1968. Recently, though, it was, I think it was 7 years ago.
Yeah.
If I have it correct, a diamond pin was awarded. Previious last diamond pin awarded before that was in the 1980s.
Wow.
So a 61.5-pound fish was landed about 6 years ago out here by a fellow named Mike Gage. And Mike Gage, interestingly, was the founder and president and chief spearhead behind the Campbell River Salmon Foundation.
Okay.
Which does a lot of fundraising and then donates all of its money towards salmon enhancement and habitat restoration. And so he's been doing that for decades.
What a gift.
What a gift, eh?
What a gift in return from the
sea,
eh? Yeah,
bit of karma, right?
Oh, totally. That's so neat. Like,
yeah.
That's the stuff you want to hear.
And rode by his son.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Icing.
Icing on the cake, you know?
That's amazing. I can't imagine what it would be like if we were fishing last week with my friend, and we brought in, a couple of 15, 16-pound Chinook.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's a decent-sized fish.
Yeah.
And then thinking, a Taiz, double that.
30, yeah. In a rowboat.
It's just, oh, man, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I love the prestige of it, like you were talking a little bit about how you explain it to people and how it's not necessarily this sports fishing as much as it is a prestigious event.
Yeah. So they call this thing we do a tournament every year,
right?
As opposed to the word derby.
Okay.
A tournament has no cash value to the prizes.
Okay.
So there's no incentive to really cheat
right.
on this kind of thing. They didn't want to sully it with things like, giving away boats and cars and whatnot. But way back in the day, and it's again lends to that more prestigious idea of what we're doing out here. It's merely membership in the club that you're trying to attain.
Which I love.
And the only way to become a member is by landing a fish, tie under club rules. You directly cannot buy your way into the club.
Which is such a great way to set it up, right?
Great.
It's just based on the...
Based on the skill of the act.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, people with more money can buy more tides, but it doesn't guarantee a membership.
it's still using the most valuable thing we have in time.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to use, try to...
Yeah, you've got to put in the time.
Yeah, I love that.
So,
do we have an average of, how many people they have into the club every year? How many? Because it's 30 pounds and up.
Yeah.
For a tide.
So, once you've become a member, you're a member for life. You may not be an active member if you're not paying your annual dues every year.
Right.
But you are a member for life. It's a good question as to how many active members there are. They would have it because they're a society.
Right.
But that would fluctuate and change every year depending on how many old members renew their membership.
Right.
And how many new members then join in a given year.
Right.
For the locals, a lot of them who have become members in the past renew them automatically. They just pay their fee every year and join because they know they're going to be fishing and they want to, be a part of the society and so on. For remote people, somebody from Toronto or elsewhere, after they've been out here, caught a fish, become a member, they probably let them lapse and just hang their diploma, their certificate on the wall and wear their lapel pin with pride.
Right.
Unless they want to come out and do it again, in which then they'd pay the fee and become an active member again.
Right.
So it really varies from year to year.
Sure.
One of the honors that's bestowed upon the members is they get to pay an extra $10 every year for their membership. Because part of that is they get the annual, the yearbook from the club, and there's a cost to that.
Sure.
So for me, I pay my $20 to register every year to try to become a member because I am still not one. And Judy gets to pay $30 because she is a member.
And she is a member. I do love how accessible that side of it is.
Yeah.
It's not like this unattainable thing. Will anybody be able to scrape that together as far as goes, right? To continue that on. And obviously the guiding and things like that. That's
beside the point. Yeah, but the actual cost of membership and stuff is kept very low.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea.
And the club has fundraising efforts to do things like renovate the clubhouse and keep up that part of things.
As any nonprofit does, right?
Yeah.
Are there any rules and regulations that feel like they're so old they feel ridiculous, or have they done a really good job? I find that you hear like these stories of these old societies that rules that have just been.
Why is that still on the books?
Well, anytime you have a group that's been doing something for over 100 years.
I don't know of any. I the only updates I know have all been to keep up with the times.
Sure.
So back in the day, when the club started, and for quite a few decades, they were allowed multiple treble barbed hooks on their lures.
Okay.
Okay. No longer allowed. Single barbless hook for conservation purposes.
Right.
Right. So that's been a change.
Has that been mostly a federal thing?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And the club was quite okay with it because, you know, we've seen the numbers of fish and we know what's going on. And yeah, the fish, the motto of the club is to give the fish a fighting chance.
Right.
And that's part of that, in the spirit of that, right? The other one that has to do with the dark colonial side of the club history is that First Nations are now permitted full membership should they catch a fish, and rowers are.
Right.
Now, so the guides are. So to put it in perspective, I don't think they ever said directly that First Nations weren't allowed, but they said that guides weren't. And the reason was that when the club started, all the guides were First Nations.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you'd ever been a guide, you weren't allowed to become a member. And that changed, I think, somewhere in the history of the club, probably in the 50s.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
Where it was seen how the discriminatory it was, and what's the point, right? If you're a guide and then you switch and start, you hold a rod, you still landed a fish under club rules.
Yeah. Why
not?
Why do we have to discriminate?
Why do we have to discriminate? So you can feel that plug bouncing away down there, right?
Oh, yeah, I can feel it.
It's
the whole
just
time.
Working against the current, which is great. That's what we want to see. We want to see that buck, 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 buck.
Feels very alive when you're fishing. It doesn't even matter if you have a fish on or not.
And one of the great attractions, I think, to this kind of fishing is you're holding the rod when the fish takes.
Mm.
It's why I like fly fishing. It's why I like this, because that strike, that moment of connection, there's nothing that beats that.
Yeah.
And with the downrigger, you don't get that.
Yeah.
You know, you get more fish, definitely. You're going to get a lot more action and find more feeding fish. But
you see it happen instead of feel it happen.
See it, yeah. And this is where it's in your hand. You've got to strike back and set the hook, and the whole thing goes wild and crazy from there. So last year, the first fish I rode last year was Terry Blasco's 33-pounder. I think it was like August the 13th or something. 12th.
Oh, we're right in the wheelhouse.
Right in the wheelhouse. And that fish had our hearts and our throats more than once.
Oh, really?
It was a bright, heavy, fast, fresh fish that had a lot of spunk. And one point it was about 30 feet from the boat, and it jumps clear of the water and shaking its head, and you can see that plug swinging around.
Oh.
You're going, oh, please don't let go. Please don't let go.
Feeling sick to your stomach.
Stomach, yeah. And then it plunges back in, and it's still on. It's like, Terry, yeah, it's still there.
Oh, man.
And another point I stood up with the net thinking it might be ready. And nope, it saw the boat, and what does it do? It goes right under the boat and across. And Terry, being an experienced angler, knew exactly what to do, and in that event, you plunge the tip after it.
Okay.
You plunge the rod right into the water because you want to keep that line off the keel.
Right.
So you want to extend the length of that under the boat, right?
Right.
And in the meantime, I'm on the oars beating a froth, trying to turn the boat around so the fish is on the same side of the boat as the rod.
Wow.
It's like, oh, you fish, you really got a lot of tricks up your sleeve.
No kidding. There's a reason why I follow them online for the Taiyi Club. They do a great job of updating each picture of each group of people that get a Taiyi every year. And they just look bedraggled.
Yeah.
Like, just exhausted.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason why.
We got it.
Like, we did it.
So every fish out here is a victory, even if it's under 30 pounds, you know, every fish is a victory.
Totally.
And again, that 30-pound line is an arbitrary line that was set by Europeans at the time. Because prior to that, when the natives did this out here from their dugout canoes, it was the young native guys who would come out and fish, not only for sustenance, but they were having fun doing it out here.
Mm.
And they called any fish out here that they hooked a tai'i. Mm-hmm. Now, tai'i is the Coast Salish word for chief, right? You've hooked the chief, and they all yelled, and away they went, you know? And sure enough, they were catching probably many more larger fish, but they wouldn't have discriminated between a 20-pound and a 60-pound fish. Mm-hmm. They're both tai'i.
Right, right.
Yeah.
There's a reason why they call it king salmon as well, too.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Of all most species of salmon we have, like surrounding Vancouver Island, Chinook are the ones that get the biggest?
Yeah, they are on average the largest. Chum, large chum will outweigh a small Chinook, but on average your king or your Chinook are the largest of the species. Now you can see a half a dozen boats here at the south end of the pool. And the Thunderbird RV park there. In the original days of the club, when it was all Europeans and Americans coming out here in the 1920s and 30s, this whole spit was covered in canvas wall tents.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And one of them would be a mess tent, really large. An entrepreneurial lady took up the challenge of feeding all those summer anglers.
Right.
A couple of wood stoves in the tent, and she'd have breakfast ready for them when they came in from their morning tide, and be serving lunch and dinner.
What an enterprise.
Yeah, what an enterprise, eh? And it was a party atmosphere, because these guys were all well-heeled people, right? They came out here to spend the summer. And so when it wasn't rowing out here and trying to catch a tai'i, it was scotch on ice on the shore and parties and dances. And, you know, having a day on the town.
I bet it would have been quite the scene.
Yeah. There were some real characters back then that made up the Tai Club and the events out here. And then Ned Painter came along, and he was a boat builder.
Okay.
And so the club started in 1924, but Ned Painter didn't show up here till the 30s. The Great Depression hit, and all his work in Port Alberni dried up. Mm. And so he'd heard about these wealthy people out here fishing somehow, and maybe there'd been a request, I'm not sure the exact details, but they were all fishing from dugout canoes still. And being a boat builder, he looked at that and went, you know, there's the well-heeled clients, they'd probably like a more comfortable boat that could fish two anglers seated comfortably with the rowing guide. So he knew what he was doing. He packed up the family, his belongings, moved to this side of the island, and started building boats for the Tai Club fishing.
Okay.
Independent businessman, just a boat builder at the time. Once he had saturated the market in a few years with enough boats, he took his grub stake he'd made from that and built the first painter's lodge on the end of the spit, the small one. Mm. And it outgrew that, and then he bought the land on the other side of the river where Painter's Lodge sits now and built the original Painter's Lodge on that side.
Oh, really?
Which burnt down in the 1980s due to arson, and now what you're seeing is the second Painter's Lodge built on that site.
Wow. I didn't know that. So
yeah.
That's amazing.
So there's the painter, bit of the painter history in Campbell River.
Do you know if there's still descendants that live in the
yes,
area?
Yes, there actually are painter descendants living here still, and in Gold River.
What a risk too, right? Like you hear that now and you're like, wow, that's amazing. They did so well. But that risk that you would have had to take to be able to do that and say, well, we're going to try this thing and
uproot our
family and see how it goes. Like, it's just stories, so many stories of that, of like taking this incredible leap and seeing how it goes.
And it was prompted by a depression, catastrophic financial events, economic events.
Everything had collapsed.
Everything had collapsed, and they were desperate too, right? But, you know, there were probably safer options, choices to make. But uprooting the family, moving across the island to build boats for where there was some money, was a calculated risk.
Sure. Moving towards opportunity, hopefully, right?
Yeah.
Instead of away from it.
So what we are fishing in now, 14-foot clinker, is a fiberglass replica of the boats that Ned Painter designed. he would have designed these the original boats out of wood, built exactly to these specifications. And being a boat builder and seeing what the demands were on the boat and the condition, local conditions, he designed them perfectly for what we're doing. Mm. They will sit one or two anglers very comfortably. Their lap strake design gives them lots of stability side to side and bow to stern. Their low profile means they catch the least amount of wind on windy days, allows you to fish a lot wider conditions. And they do the job. They roll like a dream.
It feels amazing.
They row straight.
I'm doing absolutely nothing. If you can see Rick right now, he's just working it up and doing a great job while talking. And I'm literally sitting here doing nothing.
Holding the rod.
Holding a bite. I've never felt more useless in my life.
You will earn your keep if you hook a fish. Then you've got lots to do. So don't you fret.
Were they made out of cedar, the original boat?
I don't know the wood they would have used, right. So I couldn't tell you that. I would have assumed red cedar, but that might have been a bit light duty for the beatings they can take on the beach, so it might have been something else.
Right.
These boats are hauled up on the beach regularly, and again, back in those heydays, you would have seen 50 or 60 white rowboats pulled up on the gravel of this spit when they're not in use, when they weren't fishing, up above the high tide line. With all the wall tents. So I've seen photographs of the era, and it's quite an impressive sight.
I bet.
And the sun's coming up. And there's no cakes on the griddle. There may be fish in the pool, but right now, for these boys, there's no cakes on the griddle.
That's all right.
Got my fine life and I got my old fiddle. Sun's coming up, I got cakes on the griddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny riddle. I'm thanking God I'm a rowing boy.
Who's that from?
That's John Denver. Thank God I'm a country boy. You didn't know that one?
I am ashamedly not very up on John Denver.
Okay, yeah, well he was a 70s icon. Died
what in legend. Absolutely.
A legend,
legend.
Yeah. Died in a plane crash. He was the pilot of.
Oh,
unfortunate,
really?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, we're fishing off the south corner of the south bar at the last 15 minutes here of our tide.
Time is flowing by.
And the flood tide is flowing by and it creates a rip off the corner of the bar, and that often gathers the fish. And if wherever they're gathered in any numbers and you can get your lure in amongst them, sometimes you can provoke an aggression strike, an annoyance strike.
Why would you call it an annoyance strike?
Well, these are not feeding fish.
Sure.
That's the given. None of the fish here, when you're cleaned, have anything in their stomachs. They've usually quit feeding 2 weeks before.
Okay.
And so they're starting to prepare to run up the river and spawn.
Right.
And so they're acting aggressively toward each other. You can see them often biting at each other to chase each other off a potential mate or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we assume that when these plugs or spoons are in the water and get in their faces, that it's again seen as an interloper in their personal space.
Mm.
And the only tool they've got is their mouth.
to snap at it.
And if they snap and they get hooked, it's to their detriment.
Yeah, they're coming in.
Hopefully, if you play your cards right.
That's right. So far, we have about 20 boats out this morning.
Yeah.
And we've seen one.
One boat out with a fish on.
Didn't look like it had a fish on.
And we haven't seen them come into the clubhouse for a weigh-in. So either they lost the fish, or they're still out fighting it, or it wasn't big enough.
Mm.
They decided after playing it and landing it that it's definitely under 30 pounds, not worth weighing it.
It definitely does give you that perspective, though, like you were talking about earlier, about it being a prestigious thing.
Yeah.
When you've got 20 boats out, like, surely something's going to happen,
yeah.
Right? But at the same time, that's kind of the game. That's
yeah.
That's kind of the allure that has been happening over the last, what is it, 98
years?
Years.
98 yeah.
years. So, how many is it a goal of yours to get into the Tai Chi Club? Obviously,
mine as well. Yeah, I'd like to, but my bigger goal right now is to row a bigger fish than I've rowed before. You know, something larger than 33 pounds.
Right.
Or an equally good goal is 2 Tai Chi in one season.
Okay.
I have yet to do that. There's numerous seasons I've rowed 1 Tai Chi amongst other fish, like a number of fish under 30 pounds. But I'd love to have a season where I got 2 Tai Chi.
Right.
You know? Especially for me, that if they were 2 new members to the club, then there's I'm up for a trophy called the Dick Murphy Award, named after Dr. Dick Murphy, who was very adept at rowing new members into the club.
Oh, cool.
And so the rower who rows the most new members in a season into the club was awarded the Dick Murphy Award.
Now that's a great way to continue to grow the entire footprint of the organization too, and
Really
use a part of it.
So we're in the last 15 minutes of our tide here. We've enjoyed the sunrise.
Oh, spectacular.
Seen a number of boats, seen a sea lion, see one boat go out with a fish on, seen a couple of fish jumping.
Yeah.
And had a couple of false strikes called weed masses.
The old seaweeds.
Seaweeds.
Like these fellas over here had the same thing.
Yeah. Bam!
Seaweed again. How many people are you seeing in the boat every year now? Like what would a typical year look like?
Interesting question. I'm just trying to figure out how I would answer that. I get out 40 times or more.
Okay.
And, like, are you talking new people?
Just people in general. So if they're, like, return people. How many people are you having in your...
Oh, season? Probably out of those 40 times, there's 20 different groups.
Okay.
You know? Because, I take Judy out about 12 times. I get a couple other friends out 2 or 3 times per season, some of my neighbors. And then the rest are clients.
Right.
That'll come out. And one client I've got is booked 5 tides.
Okay.
In the next week, and others have booked 2 or 3 or 4, you know, and so it'll end up be about 20 different parties in a season, I think.
That's awesome. And then you multiply that by how many other boats are out here. Like, yeah. That's a lot of people.
Yeah. I think I might spin around for a final swing down the pool, and we'll just give it a little run down there with the current. Get that bounce back.
Yeah, I can feel it instantly. Basically. Just gets a little bit of a bounce. Well, I can't thank you enough, Rick, for doing this and for taking the time to be able to share stories.
Well, it's been my pleasure. It's always fun to come out here, especially with somebody who's never done it before, show them what it's all about.
With pictures, but you know, I have such a picture in my head and hearing of the Tai Chi pool all of my life. I honestly thought it was like going to be like, you know, this circular pool.
Quite literal
that way.
A pool on the river somewhere.
But then to see it and be like, okay, like this is what, you know, it does make sense.
Yeah.
Like at first I was kind of like, this isn't a pool.
No,
but
yeah.
But it does. It, I don't know what else I would use to describe it.
Yeah, what other word would you use, right?
Yeah.
It's this strip of water along the beach that's just part of Discovery Passage. And yet, because of the currents, it's fairly well defined.
Mm-hmm.
And what other word would you use, right? And the fish gather here in numbers to hang out just before they run up the river.
Oh, very cool. Well, like I always tell my kids, it's called fishing, hunting, foraging, or whatever, or searching for a reason. It's not called getting. It was a really great time to be able to spend this time with Rick, and even though we didn't get a fish, we had a wonderful time being able to hear the history of things like the Tai Chi Pool and the Camel River area and the Northern Ireland area. So thankful for him taking the time and being able to share the wealth of knowledge. I mean, it was nonstop learning for me, and I sure hope that it was for you. If you want to follow along for the journey of the Tai Chi season, it starts on July 15th, usually annually around that time every year, and they'll be posting pictures of different salmon that are caught that meet that
tiny requirement of 30 pounds or greater. You can follow along and see the different guides that come up each and every year and what the club is up to as they continue on this incredible tradition that has been going on for nearly 100 years. I believe their centennial is next year, going on from 1924. So follow along, check out their journey. You can also follow Rick on YouTube. He has his own YouTube channel with Rick's Fly Bench that you can go and follow his journey for showing you how to do all that you could ever imagine on top of all the things that he does inside of the incredible wilderness adventures that he has. So thanks for listening along. Go check out Rick's stuff on YouTube, Rick's Fly Bench, and go and check out the Tyee Club in Camel River and see what you find this year as they start up their season. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been the Wild Islander Podcast.